And it is indeed a Wednesday, a focus on K-State Athletics. And today we're joined by Brian Smoller. He's the Senior Director of Broadcasting Video Services at K-State Athletics. He's also, you've heard him play-by-play on men's basketball, women's basketball, baseball. Brian does play-by-play so much that he can't get enough of it. He does play-by-play for intramural dodgeball, intramural kickball, shuffleboard, badminton, and I believe he just added synchronized swimming. Is that right, Brian?
Yeah. You name it. It seems like we've got we're doing a broadcast. That's for sure.
No doubt. Well, let me ask you this real quickly, because Dusty and I were talking about this the other day, and I remember in college the challenge of it, and then you do it at a much higher level in regards to doing radio play by play, and doing TV play by play. And we were talking about, you know, Kevin Kugler does that a lot. Kevin Harlan does that a lot. And they are two different animals, and we've tried to explain to some you know, regular fans that aren't really in the broadcasting the difference between TV play-by-play and radio play-by-play. How big a challenge is that, or was that for you when you started having to shuffle and bounce back and forth between radio and TV?
Well, I would say, first of all, that those two guys you mentioned, Kugler and Harlan, are two very good broadcasters. And I would say that anyone that's growing up that wants to get into the business, those you could do a lot worse than those two guys as role models. They really set a pretty high bar. And versatility is always something that I wanted to chase and be good at many different things in many different sports. And bouncing back between radio and TV, There are different skill sets, no doubt, and it depends on the sport. It kind of depends on the level of broadcast production that you're getting. But our crew is very, very good, I would say, for television production. They've won an Emmy, and even with students, and for the most part, Andy Leach, who is our director and oversees most of that, is fantastic. We just have great people. I know it gets almost nauseating for fans to hear that about K-State, but it's true. We just have a lot of people that care a lot about what their product is, and it makes it a lot easier to kind of bounce back and forth. The skill set itself, I'm kind of getting into the sportscasting nerdy weeds here, but the basic line of thumb or rule of thumb and the basic line I give people is, when you're on radio, that's the domain of the play-by-play person. That yep. person's there to describe the action and to give the listener time and score, what's going on, how it happened, right? Those are all the basics. When you get to television, that's the domain of the analyst. And Dick Vitale, of course, would be the perfect example, but those are usually larger than life, the analysts, and it's their job to entertain and provide the information, because all the time and score and brief description stuff that you would do on radio, that's no longer needed because you're on television and everyone can see that. So your skill set changes a little bit. You're more of just kind of a guide, and you're somewhat doing what the producer tells you to do as far as reading reads or, hey, we're going to get this shot. We want you to talk about this or lead us into the sideline reporter story, all those different things. It's a little bit of a different skill set, but I enjoy both.
Which one is easier in your opinion?
I don't know. I would say that, again, that goes back to the sport. I mean, television has its easiness to it in the sense that you're not having to say as many words, but it's a different skill set. And if you're not aware of things, you could be if you're not able to handle multiple things coming at you at once, yeah. then it's harder. I would tell you, radio is easier in the sense that usually the play-by-play person's kind of king, right? They're directing traffic, so to speak. So you can kind of control the broadcast, where it's going, what you're going to talk about, who's going to talk when, you're going to, okay, I'm going to read a read now, that type of thing. So in that regard, it's easier, but depending on the sport, like say it's baseball, there's a lot of information that you have to balance when you get it, and being able to fill time and pacing and, you know, is your description on time, or you remember to say the score? You know, all those types of things come in on the radio side. So I'd say they're equally difficult, but they're different, very different in your skill set.
Well, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to fill in for the baseball on Friday and Saturday, because that was an eye-opener for me from the standpoint of preparation with all of the numbers. I mean, you know, when you do a high school baseball game or even high school athletics, you clearly don't have nearly as much statistical information in front of you as you do doing collegiate games, in particular Division I in Kansas State. But the baseball stats, I mean, one of the biggest challenges for me getting prepared for the games is to pick what I thought would be best to mention here and there, because there's so much information, sheet upon sheet and pamphlet after pamphlet information, not only on the team that you cover, but the other team as well. And I think that's one of the challenges, is just trying to sort through all that. And I want to say minutia, but there's certain stuff that you may think is important that the next person may think is important or not as important. And you just have to decipher through all that, don't you?
Oh, no doubt. I would say overarching for anyone that wants to get into broadcasting and play-by-play, one of the earliest lessons I received, it was a great one. Years ago, I attended what was called the Mitch Holthus Sportscasters Academy. If someone were to say what, there are certain guys that followed into the Bob Davis tree, so to speak. That would be Wyatt Thompson. He was very much aligned with that. My good friend Wyatt, and he came from Fort Hays, and with Bob, and then there's Gerard Welbrock, fantastic yes. play-by-play guy at Fort Hays State. Those guys all kind of came out of that tree. I'm on the Mitch Holthus tree. It's myself and Greg Sharp and some others. But Mitch had a long time had a Sportscasters Academy, and one of the years right before I came to K-State was one of his last years doing it, and it was a four-day intensive academy. And I will tell you, I had never learned any more than I did in those 4 days about broadcasting and what it was to be a sportscaster. But one of the things that he had mentioned during that time was about how you really had to be able to determine what's most important for the listener or viewer, and being able to step back from whatever prep you're doing and understand, okay, what's the story here? Yeah. What is the main points I want to get across from this player, from this team, this coach? And then get all your information to kind of support that and deliver it. So when it comes to your point about baseball, there, no doubt, we in college and then again in the pros have a decided advantage over those calling people high school games, because I remember when I was calling the high school games as well, well, you can't get anything. You can't hardly get any numbers. You're lucky to get a roster
yes.
that has the right information on it. So you have to kind of really search to get your stuff. But on the college level, you can get down buried into the numbers. And if you get too far into the numbers, which I've been guilty of at times, then, you know, the fans are like, what? This doesn't make any sense. So you got to figure out what tells the story the best. This guy's really hot right now. So I've got a number here of what he's been doing the last six games. And this is why it's important. If I say OPS, I got to explain what that is, or on-base percentage. Why is that important? Well, he's getting on base all the time. He doesn't have to get hits, but he's getting walks, which leads to runs. So it's all about trying to frame those best arguments, and then also conversing with your analyst about, hey, I'm going to go this way with these numbers. Are you comfortable expounding on this topic? So it all works together.
Absolutely. Brian Smoller, he's the Senior Director of Broadcast and Video Services, K-State Athletics, with us on the Sports Ticket today. All right, let's jump into the K-State men and their run to the Elite Eight. Finished 26-10, and it's bittersweet whenever your season comes to an end. And the men's team, before the season, if you would have told anybody, hey, Brian Smoller, the K-State men are going to go 26-10. They're going to beat KU in Bramlage in Jerome Tang's first year. You're going to have two all Big 12 first teamers in Keontae Johnson, Marquise Noel, all American players, third teamers, depending on the publication, what you look at. And you're going to be a 3 seed in the Big 12 tournament. You're going to be a 3 seed in the NCAA tournament. And you're going to go all the way to Elite Eight. I think there have been people running to the cash register, cashing out, saying, let's go ahead and book this. That'll be terrific. And I'm all aboard. And then you get to Elite Eight, you beat Kentucky, beat Michigan State, and then you play Florida Atlantic, who's a really, really good team, as we know, 35 wins on the year. And you fall a little bit short when you're a favorite in that game after being an underdog against Michigan State and Kentucky. Would K-State fans, and this is something we threw out the other day, do you think K-State fans would feel a little bit better had K-State lost to, say, Duke or Kentucky or Michigan State in Elite Eight instead of Florida Atlantic because of the recent history of falling to these mid-majors in the Elite Eight?
Well, I don't think there's any question that the name on the front of the jersey certainly makes you feel a little less satisfied with that deep run than it does based on the actual team. I mean, there's no question that Florida Atlantic, and I think our coaches said the same, was a better team than those schools you just mentioned. Do you look at the path that Florida Atlantic took to get there? It wasn't as if they had an easy run either. I mean, yes, they had to get past a 16 seed, but Tennessee was no slouch. Yeah. I mean, Tennessee was playing very, very well, and most had Tennessee beating K-State if they had advanced. So I think Florida Atlantic's a pretty good school and pretty good team. I think they got a great shot to make the national championship game. Now, the beauty of the tournament is that it's all about matchups, and it's all about who's hot at what time. And truthfully, the team that comes out of that as the national champion is rarely regarded as that was the best team in college basketball that year.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good thing to remember, that winning the tournament is not necessarily a referendum on how good of a team you were during the season. Now, in this case, because I think we could all agree that Kansas and most of the Big 12 were very good basketball teams this year. Just because the Big 12 doesn't have a team left in the Final Four does not discount what the Big 12 did this year, nor should it discount what K-State did. And I think the Wildcats, no question, as you said, would absolutely take an Elite Eight run before the season started, and the fans would as well. I think this team showed at the end that the way that it was pieced together with the veterans and winners, as Jerome Tang liked to call them, were certainly well thought out as far as chemistry and the pieces fitting well together and complementing each other. But the encouraging part is that this is just the start, and if they're that good in a short amount of time of picking out the right pieces that fit where, what can you do when you give these guys more than a year to go recruit and get after it, both in the portal and in the high school ranks or wherever? That's the part that gets you excited about what's to come. Marquise was unbelievable and will walk out of K-State in his career as one of the great all-time guards that's ever played here at K-State. And I think he would, if Coach Weber had still been here, Nigel Pack, the whole nine yards, I don't doubt that Marquise Noel would have improved and would have been an all-conference player. But I don't think he would have reached the heights that he did, nor on the national stage that he did, when K-State pretty much took over the world for two or three days, if it hadn't been for this staff and the way that they let him be himself and kind of gave him guardrails to follow. Just an incredible couple of days there when K-State was on top of the mountain, so to speak.
Our focus on K-State athletics today is brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. Brian Smola, our guest today on The Ticket. You know, we were talking about this the other day. Marquise Noel is one of those point guards. You know, back in the day, the point guards, you know, think about Magic Johnson, John Stockton, even further back, it was usually pass first. Maybe you looked the score from time to time, but they were considered the true point guards. And we've seen this now for 10, 15, 20 years where we got a lot of scoring point guards. They can pass. They can get double-doubles, lots of assists. They can also take over a game, score 30 on a given night. Marquise Noel certainly would fall under that category. And, you know, talking with K-State fans and watching the games as I did this year, and I'm guessing you probably did the same thing when you were watching, and as we get older, all of us have a little bit less hair to pull out of our head. But there are times where I think, I know I did it. I took both hands to my head, and I was just, like, amazed at a pass that Noel made for an alley-oop. And I'm like, oh, my. Like, the Michigan State lob to Johnson was just, it had me jumping off the couch. I was like, dear goodness, oh, my, what a play and what a time for it. And then there were those times where, well, for instance, late in the Michigan State game where you're up two, you know, jacking a 28-foot three-pointer when all you need is two to get a two-possession lead, and you get to the line and you're done double bonus. And so that made you pull your hair out because of that particular shot. What about the – I don't know if it's right to say feast or famine, because I would say Marquise Noel, 90% of the time, it all worked out just fine. And I'm not saying without that Marquise Noel is the reason K-State didn't go any further. But what I would like to zero in on with you is – what about the dependency? Because there were times this year in particular games, and we saw it, I think, in the game in the Elite Eight, where I think there are times where Marquise Noel is so good and so fun to watch that sometimes even as a player you might get stuck watching. Or at Golden State, Draymond Green's talked about it, that Steph Curry gets hot. He admits, sometimes I just stop and I'm actually got to catch myself like, hey, I'm not a fan. I got to go get the rebound. What about that with K-State? Was there maybe too much dependency in certain moments of time for the Wildcats with Noel? Or was it maybe that the guys are just kind of deferring to him in situations where maybe the ball didn't move as much as you would have liked to have seen it move?
I think that's a pretty astute observation on your part. I don't know that there were times, and maybe they would admit now, that guys were watching him do his thing, partly because of the guardrails that were put in place by the coaching staff. A lot of those, what you're talking about, shots, where he likes to talk it about, hey, I can be a lion or I can be a tiger. And when he's a tiger, it's when we're seeing the 28-footers, the 30-foot shots, and him going to chase his own stuff. There were less moments of those this year than there were in his past. Now, I will agree with you that in the Florida Atlantic game, it felt like there were a little bit more of that. The dependency part is you look at how much of the offense was running through Marquise Noel, either by pass or by shot.
Yep.
And when that's over 70%, the concern then becomes, well, okay, now we're relying on one guy to really drive everything. So one question mark for the staff will be, how do you replace that?
Sure.
I mean, are you going to be the same? Do you have to go find another guy that has to be that way, that owns the ball that much and triggers everything? Or are they going to be a coaching staff that pivots and changes the offense based on personnel, which is what I think they will be, and may not necessarily need someone that's like that? I will compare Marquise Noel to one of the great dual-threat quarterbacks that K-State's ever had, Michael Bishop. He reminds me of the great guys like that, and Allen Iverson, Donovan Mitchell in the NBA, guys that are going to go get their shot but also can deliver great passes, are people that you're going to have to accept a little bit of the good with the bad. And I remember Bill Snyder for years talking about that with Michael Bishop, that the guy is so good and so much better than everybody else, we're just going to have to absorb a little bit of the good with the bad. Or a little bit of the bad with the good. And for Michael, it came the fumbles in the 1998 Big 12 championship game that when K-State was up big and seemed to be on their way. So you're going to get a little bit of that with some true superstars. You're going to get the good with the bad. I'm sure there's games, if you watch every game for Golden State, there are some threes that Steph Curry takes. You're like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
That's not a shot you should take right now. But it's part of it. It's part of what makes them great, is that they feel like the next one's going in. They feel like the next pass is going to be amazing and it's going to be on point. I'm curious to see how K-State operates now without Marquise, and if they go get another portal veteran guard to kind of replace him and do the same stuff, or if they're going to pivot and change based on personnel, because they get a lot bigger next year, how they go about it. You know, K-State women kind of have the same point guard,
yes,
sort of scoring mentality with Serena Sundell, who's kind of not your prototypical point guard either. At 6'1", much bigger than most point guards, and one that can go get her basket and score. It's a little bit of the same.
Next year's team, it's really hard now with the transfer portal and whether guys are going to go pro or not. There's so many different variations now. It's hard to project and say, what's this team going to look like? But based on who you believe or know that's coming back next year for Kansas State, who are you most excited about in regards to the future possibilities?
Well, Tomlin would lead the list there just because of the sheer potential. And that's assuming that he comes back. Now,
right.
Naquan has not announced one way or the other what he'll do. I would not be surprised if he announced that he was going to go test NBA waters and go to the workouts and all that sort of stuff and then decide what he's going to come back or not. But it's a pretty heavy draft as far as international and underclassmen declaring. So I would think that, I mean, based on project or projection, he certainly could be a guy that gets slotted into that G League or whatever it's called now, the lower level, and work on a two-way contract. But, you know, with NIL and the rest and the quality of life, why not just come back to school and make another deep run in postseason to get your improvement there? I think Taj Manning's a guy that off the bench K-State's pretty excited about. The recruiting class they're pretty excited about. Truthfully, I'm kind of interested to see what Cam Carter does as another step forward. A sophomore that really finished strong. Mississippi State, he didn't play a lot at Mississippi State. I think this is a young man that is kind of in the mold of the guys that K-State's always had, right? Their first 2 years, they're kind of a role player helping out, then they kind of take the next step. I mean, Marquise Noel was not Marquise Noel until his senior season. Jake Pullen wasn't Jake Pullen until his junior and senior season. So, I'm not saying Cam Carter could be those type of guys, but I'm curious to see the next step he takes, because he really showed some stuff down the stretch for K-State.
Absolutely. All right, let's shift to the K-State women. They finished the season 19-17, falling there in Seattle to Washington in a low-scoring affair, 55-48. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm encouraged by the future for K-State. Obviously, Gabby Gregory now says she's coming back next year, which most people anticipated. She was one of the top scorers in the Big 12. K-State went 19-17 overall, 5-13 in the Big 12. Of course, the big thing that stands out, they didn't have a true road win all season long. But Ayoka Lee will be back, Serena Sundell back, the Glenn twins back. It's interesting you brought up Serena Sundell playing point guard. I talked to somebody the other day, and they said, you know, if K-State had a true point guard, or if somebody could, if Sundell could move over to the two, and then you have Lee back at the five, how good could this team be? Even if they don't find that person, I mean, on paper, this team could be extremely good next year, couldn't they?
Oh, no question. I think this will be one of the more anticipated seasons for K-State women's basketball in some time. I mean, maybe the Shady Lane group, when they were seniors with Marlise Gibson and the rest of those players, when they won that coming off a Big 12 title, and then maybe the last year that Kendra Wecker and Nicole Oldie were playing together back in their early aughts when they won a conference title as well, K-State will be loaded for bear. They will be one of the top three teams in the league, no doubt. The league will be undergoing a little bit of a transition just with some of those older COVID players moving on. Iowa State, for example, has lost nearly their entire roster to the portal. So I think K-State is going to be certainly one of the teams to watch for next year. Maupin really showed some stuff down the stretch. Eliza Maupin, the talented freshman. And then the two freshmen coming in, you talk about point guard. There's a lot of talk about Taryn Sides coming in day one being point guard. And you could do a lot worse. I mean, she's obviously super state, whatever you want to call it, all class, all state. I mean, they are very excited about Taryn Sides, very excited about Alexis Hess coming from back east, another recruit that's kind of a more of a small forward that can really shoot it, and was going to go to Rutgers, and now it landed in K-State's lap because of a parent that went to was at Fort Riley and just had a military ties to this area. So those young players coupled with the ones you've already mentioned, plus Lee, and you don't know what Lee will be coming back. You assume she's 100%, right. But even 80 to 90%, she was playing at 80% the last couple of years. She scored 61 on a knee that had no cartilage in it. Mm. So, you know, her being healthy or even feeling better than she did before, where does that take her? Plus Gabby Gregory on the outside. Oh, the possibilities are endless. You don't want to assume anything. Every team is different. You still got to go do the work. You still got to do all the stuff, but very excited about women's hoops for next year.
Yeah, Taryn Sides, I've seen her many times over the years terrorize opponents, including Beloit over the last 4 years. She's an outstanding player, and I'm looking forward to seeing her in a K-State uniform as well. You know, it's interesting when we look at it from this perspective that K-State did as well as I think they could have without Lee this year. And Gabby Gregory was huge, obviously, coming in as a transfer from OU. And so on paper, we definitely think this team would be better next year, and they should be. I want to tie the men's and women's programs together from this perspective. I was asked the other day, Brian, can you imagine if Nigel Pack would have stayed, how good K-State would have been? And I said, well, if Nigel Pack was still at Kansas State, then Marquise Noel maybe doesn't flourish as much as he did this year. Maybe the chemistry isn't as good. Maybe there's not enough basketballs to go around. It's all a hypothetical. We'll never know. But I do know that if Nigel Pack was still on the team, that K-State would have played differently. Some way, some form, they would have played differently this year. Whether it had been good or bad, we'll never know. From the women's team perspective, it will be a different way to run offense when you have a 6'5", 6'6", All-American center inside. It'll be a lot different than how the team played this year, and that'll be one of the challenges, won't it, is to adapt to having Lee inside?
No question. I think to your point, Desi Sills isn't here is the answer.
Yeah, that's true.
If Nigel Pack is still on team, because you don't need another guard from the portal, so that would have been the trade-off. Now, some might have taken that trade, others would not have. I mean, Desi Sills, you don't beat Kansas at home if it isn't for Desi Sills.
Yeah.
So, all right, so on the women's side, to your point, 100%. Now, for those that don't know, K-State, when they found out about Lee in the summer, right before the fall, practices began in August and September, when they found out that they were going to be without Lee, they had a decision to make. Could they keep the offense and defensive schemes and plans and strategies that they've had, or do you scrap it and go with something different based on the personnel you had? And they elected to go with the latter. So they, K-State ran a completely different offense and defensive philosophy this year that they have not run since Jeff Mitty has arrived here at K-State. They were primarily man. They went zone very little. They, on the offensive side, were much more of a four-out, one-in look and dribble drive to the basket, try and get to the free throw line. This is a team that set the single-season record for free throws made. Serena Sundell personally broke the school record for free throws made in a single season. Gregory also broke the record but finished second behind Sundell. And you saw Gabby posting up. They went five out at times with Shamatzi out on the post, so around the wing, shooting threes. That's how they beat Iowa here, was going five out. So they did not have their normal offense. Now, it took a bit to kind of get adjusted to that, and I think some players like Heavenly Greer, who was here specifically to pair with Lee, it took a little bit to get adjusted to that. I think it'll be easier to slide back into the idea of Lee being in the middle of a 2-3 zone, matchup zone, and on the offensive side, playing around Lee and through Lee with passing than it will be to do what they did this year. So you can't assume everything, and your question is a good one, but my guess is Gabby Gregory, the Glenn twins, Sundell, operating with Ayoka in the middle will be in a better position because you don't have to create things. The perimeter defense can't just sit out on you the whole time and leave Ayoka Lee one-on-one.
Yeah.
You can't do it because if you do that, she'll score 61 on you.
Right.
The way Oklahoma, that was how Oklahoma chose to defend that entirety of the game. They went one-on-one and defended the three. Well, it doesn't work if Ayoka Lee is going to drop 30, 40, 50 points on you. So you have to bring help. You have to double. And if you do that, you're going to leave people that get a lot of time to set up and get your feet lined up, shoulders straight. And if Glenn and Sundell and Gregory all get that time, they're going to shoot 40% from behind the arc. So at least on paper, I don't know how you defend it, but it'll be very fun to watch.
Yeah, very exciting. Looking forward to that. And then we will close with baseball with you. Very exciting times for the K-State baseball team under Pete Hughes. They've won four straight, 18-8 overall, 4-2 in the Big 12, a sweep of Oklahoma for the first time since 1990, a home sweep. And then coming from behind, the win at the Air Force Academy yesterday by a final of 12-9. You know, what stood out to me on Friday and Saturday was how good they were defensively, and their bullpen pitched very well. The starters, I thought, did a nice job in both games on top of that. And then the clutch hitting. They didn't get it against St. Thomas on that Wednesday night prior to the OU series, and then they were able to deliver the last four games. But when you look at this baseball team for Kansas State, that certainly has some momentum of playing good baseball and getting another win yesterday, and they'll be on the road at Air Force today at 1 o'clock and then a three-game set starting on Friday at home against West Virginia. What stands out to you when you watch this baseball team?
Well, two things, walks on both sides, both on the mound and at the plate. So K-State is way below where they were at this point last year or the year before in walks issued. They're among the lowest in the Big 12, and they lead not just the Big 12, but lead the nation in walks taken at 183 through 26 games. They have been incredibly patient, and what it has, they're already one of the top power teams in the country. 35 home runs, ranking the top 10 nationally. They're second in the Big 12. So when you couple in guys getting on base by way of walks, their 69 stolen bases also lead the Big 12, and you have the power component, there is a reason why they're averaging 8.5 runs a game.
Yeah.
They can get on base as soon as you make a mistake and you put them on by way of a walk, they will score runs. And I'll tell you, K-State's playing chess in a little bit when everyone else is playing checkers. There's a big topic this year in college baseball about the strike zones of umpires being the smallest they've ever been. And part of that has been because of the technology of a thing called TrackMan, which is a tracking system that's prolific in Major League Baseball but is now trickled down into college baseball. Because everyone's got television games and you can see, and TrackMan tracks every pitch and where it's at, you can evaluate umpires the umpire evaluators can grade out umpires like they've never had before. And so you've seen these guys in the past that have these huge wide strike zones all of a sudden get down to these very small strike zones. We've seen almost everyone this year that even has a reputation of being a guy who's going to give you a couple inches off the plate. Nope, it's a very tight strike zone.
Mm.
So it leads one to believe that if you can be patient at the plate,
Yeah. You're
going to get on base more. And that's what's happened with K-State. Their on-base percentage is through the roof. They're getting guys on. They're not walking guys themselves. They've got some guys like Tyson Nabors, their closer, that can just blow up by you at 95-plus. And it's led to a lot more wins than losses. You're always going to drop a game here or two that you shouldn't just because it's college baseball. You can't win them all. But this weekend will be a great weekend. Good weather is expected. And number 24, West Virginia, is playing as good as anybody in the country right now coming into this weekend. But if K-State can get a series win against West Virginia, they're going to be sitting in a pretty good spot in the Big 12 in a year where the league may not have as dominant of a team as they've had in the past. Texas is sitting atop the league, but it seems like there isn't that one team you think, oh, boy, well, how are you going to beat them? I think everyone's got a chink in the armor, and K-State's showing that early on their road schedule has paid off. They've got 7 wins out of 11 road games, and that's way above where they've been in some time.
It's been quite a year. Why not finish it out with a great year in baseball? I mean, the Big 12 champs in football, of course, the Elite Eight run for the men's basketball team, and now the baseball team off to a really nice start in Big 12 play as well. All right, Brian, time for our off-the-wall question, something off the wall to ask you before we let you go.
Sure.
And I tagged you this on Twitter. I don't know if you saw it or not. The Florida Atlantic radio play-by-play guy, the internet went down for him, the Ethernet connection for the broadcast with about 30 seconds to go in the Elite Eight game of the Florida Atlantic in Kansas State. And he was interviewed after the game, and he said, thankfully, Jerome Tang called a timeout, this, this, and this. So he was feverishly, frantically trying to find a way to get back on the air, had to turn behind the table behind him, and then they ran a cord that was available there into his system, and then I think his color analyst or somebody was holding the Comrex unit so that it could reach far enough, and he was able to get back on the air and make the once-of-a-lifetime call, more than likely, for Florida Atlantic as their play-by-play guy. And I can imagine, but in that specific instance where this is a once-in-a-lifetime situation, probably Florida Atlantic, I can't imagine how stressed out he was, but there have been times in my lifetime in broadcasting, and probably anybody else, where you've had somebody unplug you, something crazy has happened, you've been knocked off the air. So I'm asking you the off-the-wall question, what broadcasting nightmare have you had to experience, a particular situation, or maybe you've been lucky enough not to have to deal with that, but maybe, just maybe you're like me, and you had some wild and weird nightmare where you showed up at the wrong location for a ball game. I've had dreams like that, nightmares where I thought the game was here, and I went to the road facility because I got crisscrossed, or I forgot my equipment bag back at the radio station. That actually hasn't happened to me in real life, but it has happened in a nightmare. Dusty, that happened to him one time. He was 15 miles down the road, had to turn around and go get it. So what about Brian Smoller? What broadcasting nightmare can you share with our listeners?
Boy.
So many, right?
Yeah, I'd say there's many. There's many that have happened. Yeah, certainly. You mentioned earlier the schedule and all the different sports that we do, and no doubt, and this time of year and also in November when you're just crossing over between many different sports and you're trying to bounce and get guys, one of my job is to kind of coordinate who's broadcasting what and who's going where and who what equipment's going where. And there are times where you get harried and you're busy and you get on the plane and you're like, wait, did I get the equipment back or the case? Is it with us? And then I have to have someone ship it to us. That's happened. The best story I can tell you is we were in the Bahamas and doing a game, and it was one of those November tournaments, right, for women's basketball, and we were playing at some rinky-dink high school gym on an island there, and on the Grand Bahama Island, and clearly it's a different lifestyle, island life, right? And so we get to the end of the game, and we're in post game. We're the last game of the night of a 4-game tournament, and they were going to do a Thanksgiving sort of big party, island party, back at the resort on one of the other islands. So everyone was getting out of there as soon as possible. And of course, we're wrapping up and our post-game show, and all of a sudden, all the power goes off in the entire building. And I mean, pitch black. And we're like, I turned to Randy Peterson, who's the media relations person who was with me, and I had a battery pack in my unit, so I was able to, we were off the air, but I had to call on the phone and finish post-game, which wasn't very long, but just did it. And then we walk outside, everybody's gone. Buses are gone. Everything's gone. There's nobody here. And we're looking around, and this car pulls up with, you know, it's like something out of the movies. Very tinted windows, kind of trimmed out, and it rolls on the window. The guy says, "Hey, do you guys need a ride?" And I'm like, "No, I'm good. We'll just die." And the guy ends up giving us a ride, and, you know, we're thinking, "Oh boy, we're going to get kidnapped. I mean, we got all this gear, and, you know, where are we going?" And turns out the guy was super nice. He actually had a daughter that ran track at K-State, of all places.
Really?
So it kind of had a nice tie, but then we ended up getting to the place where we needed to go. But I'll never forget that story. There was also a time when we were in Mexico doing a game, and we were playing in a hotel banquet room, and they had daisy-chained a whole bunch of lights to light up the court, like just normal fluorescent light bulbs. Uh-huh. Like nothing, just like you should see the long tube lights, right? And they were all power stripped together, all going into the back, into the kitchen. And when the kitchen door would open up, it was like something out of the Christmas Vacation. There was all these plugs plugged into one outlet. So we're getting ready to do this one game, and all of a sudden a guy comes running by us with a fire extinguisher. I'm like, what? And it turns out the kitchen's on fire because of from all these guys having plugged in all these lights. And we're like, should we all go? And the guy comes back out, and he's like sweating. He sits down next to Randy and me, and we're like, "Are you okay?" And he's like, "Yeah, there's a huge fire back there." And we're like, should we all go? Because there's like a game going on before ours. And we're like, do we need to leave? And he's like, no, they're fine. So, but nobody was everyone that was cooking back there wasn't going to put it out. They just wanted me to put it out. So I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, you never know what's going to happen when you're on the road in those Thanksgiving tournaments in other countries. I mean, you take it for granted that you go to a random high school and you may or may not have internet, you may have power, but nothing like going to Puerto Rico or anywhere on the islands where you infrastructure-wise, because of hurricane season or whatever else, you are lucky if you get stuff going. But, I have millions of those stories. It would take up way too much time.
I never know what I'm going to get when we have our guests on the show with the Off the Wall, but I can tell you I wasn't anticipating a kitchen fire to be part of one of your stories. That was pretty interesting. Wow, that's one of a kind right there. Lucky you.
Yeah, the kitchen was immediately behind the stands of where we were sitting. So, I mean, it was like 20 feet. It wasn't even that far.
Man, oh, man. Yeah. Wow. Well, you survived it. That's the good news. That's for sure.
We did.
Yeah, both of those situations. Hey, always appreciate your time. You do a wonderful job covering KC Athletics. I still shake my head at how you can keep track of all of that stuff in regards to what you just explained and making sure there's announcers for all these games, especially when all the sports converge at the same time as you had here recently. And so appreciate everything that you do. And I don't know when you really have some free time, some downtime to kick back and relax, but you certainly deserve it. So whenever you get that chance to do that, I hope you fully enjoy it.
I will do that, sir. I appreciate it, and thank you for filling in. Coach Hughes texted me after the first game and said he found his new favorite radio guy, and I was like, "Oh, you like Wade from our filling guys?" He goes, "No, I like him better than all the radio guys that we have."
Oh, wow!
And I, he was just saying that to give me a little dig, but that's Coach Hughes. He loves to do that. But he was very complimentary of you, and looking forward to having you do more stuff for us. Obviously, we're very happy that you helped out. But thank you for the kind words. I'll be clipping out your quote here about taking time off and send it to my bosses.
Okay, excellent. I'm glad I could help you in any which way that I can. Brian, thanks again, and we will talk to you soon, bud.
All right, bud. See you.
That's Brian Smoller. He is the Senior Director of Broadcasting Video Services, K-State Athletics. Did a wonderful job covering K-State Athletics. 10:14 is our time, and our focus on K-State Athletics brought to you today by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.